And welcome back to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. Tonight, we get to have a very wonderful special guest return back to us, Jerry Yellen.
Nice to be here, Scott. Thank you.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you back. Tonight, we're going to really focus a little bit more on mental health issues in vets and your story as well, which is a really fascinating story. I remind everybody you're listening to Mental Health Matters, which broadcasts Tuesdays at 6:30, and Thursdays at 12:30 in the afternoon. You could also email us at mentalhealthmatters or at KRUUFM.com. So, Jerry, it's so great to have you back, man. So I really want to hear you. First, let's start off with just some simple news. You've met with the governor of Iowa.
Yes.
And a whole lot of other dignitaries regarding mental health issues, regarding veterans issues.
Yes.
Tell us what's happened.
Well, I'm the national spokesman for Spirit of 45 Day, which is going to be on August 14th, 15th, and 16th, Friday, August 14th, and 15th and 16th. And I met with the governor two or three weeks ago, and he said, you know, Jerry, I'm going to the governor's conference in Washington, D.C. For the end of February. Why don't we try and get you to come down and talk about you and TM and Spirit of 45?
Well, this is the governor said this.
This is the governor talking to me with his aide. Well, then I got a phone call a day or two later. He said, and he said to me, he said, if we can't do that, I'll deliver a letter to all of the 50 governors, all 49 other governors. I'll deliver a letter about you, about what you're doing with veterans, about what you're doing with Spirit of 45. Two or three days later, I got a letter in the email. And so on February 26th or 27th, the governor met with all the other governors in Washington, D.C., and he hand-delivered the letter to 30 of the governors, and he emailed the letter to the other 19 that didn't get there, all about TM,
Spirit of 45. Again, for people who aren't aware,
Transcendental Meditation for veterans.
And why is that? Well, we'll get into why that's important. But what is the Spirit of 45 as well?
Well,
or is that a separate subject?
There was a concerted effort by the United States of America, the entire country, in World War II, started on December 7th, 1941. In January of 1941, prior to the war, our president, my president, from the time that I was 8 years old in 1932 until I was 21 years old on Iwo Jima in March of 1945, we had one president. He was elected for four terms. His name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And in January of 1941, he made a speech called the Four Freedoms Speech. First freedom is the freedom of expression, the freedom of speech everywhere in the world. The second expression was freedom of worship for every faith, for all faiths, all over the world. And the third freedom was the freedom of want, of people helping other people so nobody suffers from want for food, clothing, a job, anything that they need to live.
It's amazing.
And the fourth freedom was the freedom from fear. The fear of other countries attacking you, the fear of other people attacking you, the freedom from fear. That's what the Spirit of 45 was about in 1941, 42, 43, 44, into August of 1945. This country sent, 16 million young people in uniform, 10% of the population. There were 8 million young women who joined up. They were called Rosie the Riveters. They went to work in the factories. They produced the munitions. They produced my airplanes. They all worked for aircraft companies. And there was gas rationing. There was food rationing. And there were jobs aplenty. We are not a nation unified today. So the Spirit of 45 in 2010 was a day that Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, joined by Daniel Inouye, the senator from Hawaii, now gone, World War II Medal of Honor winner, and Frank Lautenberg, also a World War II veteran, now gone, had Congress pass a day of remembrance for the 16 million people who served this country in World War II. Hmm. And that falls on the second Sunday of August, every year in perpetuity. We're trying to kick it forward, teach the young people about what that spirit of 45 was, and make it into a national holiday. And I'm the national spokesman for that group.
But what's so amazing about this is not just, okay, here's another holiday, here's another way to celebrate, but it's really about those four principles and doing something with those today to go forward. So it's Absolutely. Not just about reflecting back and, hey, it's a day off work or it's a day off bank holiday or whatever. But it's actually like, no, this has serious meaning. Those four freedoms are serious.
Well, that's what this country was founded upon. And that's the reason why we have a country.
A lot of that.
It has been lost, a lot of it.
You know, it gets lost in bickering Congress and doesn't want to do things. And it gets lost in our own individual issues where we're not focused on a united front to do anything.
Well, I'm not interested so much in the people my age. I just turned 91 a couple of weeks ago.
Which is hard to imagine looking at you, I'll tell you.
There are people out there, 50s and 60s. I have my oldest son will be 65 in November, and his youngest brother will be 62. And I have them all the way down to 55 years old. I'm not talking about that generation. I'm talking about the younger generation, the generation that is connected to the world through the internet, through their cell phones, that don't talk to people. They don't have any conversations with anybody. I don't really think they know about the spirit of 45.
No, absolutely.
So I'm trying to reach out to the young people of our world.
And what would you tell them? What is the message that you'd like them to take from this?
My message is, every day, do something for someone else and don't tell anybody about it. Just do something good for somebody else. See what you feel when you do something for someone else. Don't ask for someone to do something for you. Do something good for someone else. Even down to doing your homework, which would please your teacher, because she's there working her butt off to give you an education, and she needs appreciation just as much from you as you need an education from her. So by doing your homework and doing it well, you're making her effort a difference. You're doing something good for somebody else. Think about other people, not just about me. We have become a me culture, completely a me culture.
Absolutely.
All about me, not enough about you. Oh, these are some of the things that have helped me through life. And Scott, at this period in my life, I am more fulfilled for every day of what I'm doing than I ever was in my life before.
Because you're doing more. Well, you have a purpose. You have a purpose in your life, which is central.
I have a pure purpose of life. I also have a purpose on the international scene. I have three half American, half Japanese grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Their other grandfather fought in the Japanese Air Force, flew an airplane in a Japanese Air Force, and never fired a shot at his enemy, didn't die for his emperor. He told me that. He had those regrets. But I want my grandchildren and their peers in Japan to feel that their grandchildren on the Japanese side, their grandfathers, served in honor for what they believed in, served their country the same as I served my country. In that way, we can eliminate thoughts about war, because what we believe is right when we're doing it sometimes is proven wrong.
Absolutely. But let me pick up on two points you've mentioned, which have true impact on each of our individual mental health. One is this notion of volunteering. By being able to connect to others and do something for others, get your hands dirty, not just donate some money, but get your hands dirty doing something, making a difference, is one of the best things you can ever do for yourself and for your own mental health. The other thing that you mentioned is this purpose in life, which is central existential theme to why we do what we do. I'm very much enamored with one of my favorite people in the world, a guy named Viktor Frankl, who was a psychiatrist in the concentration camps. And his whole thing dealt with purpose in life and how we deal with that. And so this positive view of an existential frame of what we can actually do to make a difference why we're here, what we can do about being here. And that's where our power comes from. That's where our heart, that's where our mind. And if we're focused on making a difference in the lives of others and having a life of meaning and purpose, then the small things start fading away. Even depression and anxiety.
There's no question about that.
Because we get lost in ourselves.
When you go into the military,
yeah,
you learn something huge. You learn that your buddies' lives are more important than your life. There isn't a soldier who ever served in combat that wouldn't give his life to save his buddies, do something for them when they saw a problem. Medal of Honor winners win the Medal of Honor not because of heroics, but because they're trying to do something to save somebody else, to save an injury, to save somebody else in your platoon. This is the essence of life is to give, not to receive. And the more, you know, even religions say that. Give of yourself to other people.
By the way, you're listening to, sorry to cut you off for a second, you're listening to Mental Health Matters tonight, and we are interviewing once again Jerry Yellen for one of the most fantastic interviews ever. But that's a really central point. In the military, the whole focus is really about that the life of your buddy is more important than your life.
That's why there's so much post-traumatic stress disorder.
Because it's not because, well, you say it.
Well, when you do something for somebody else and they die,
yeah,
which is what happens in war, or you can't perform,
yes,
because of your injuries,
yes,
you suffer from that all of your life.
Yes.
And that's what post-traumatic stress disorder is.
And the PTSD that happens is also because of that sense of helplessness that I couldn't save my buddy. It's not from me doing my job. It's not from being a vet, or being a soldier. It's really that sense of I can't do what I'm here to do. Just like we all feel that sense of helplessness when we see somebody getting hurt that we can't help. Trauma, as I always say, isn't what happened. It's what we did to ourselves afterwards and what we're still doing to ourselves afterwards. That guilt, that shame, that remorse, that pain that we hold rapidly and attach ourselves to, instead of coming back to, okay, who am I now?
Yeah.
What is my purpose now? How can I do something to make a difference in other lives and thus in my life today? Is an avenue to start getting out of that pain.
Well, mental wellness is also about being able to recall. And what happens when you go through trauma, the brain remembers it.
Yes.
You try to forget it. You don't want to remember
yeah.
it. And so you go into a different kind of state of consciousness, which sometimes is anger, sometimes it's killing spree, sometimes all of these guys that are yeah. out there now who have done these things because they were in the military, the reaction is a reaction to what they don't want to remember.
That's right. And that you suppress it. I talk about that beach ball. If you shove that beach ball underwater, what happens? It pops up, right?
Yes.
And if you shove it down even harder, it pops up even harder, right? It's doing something about what's going on. It's not being in denial. Bad things happen to all of us. Every single person I've ever met, something bad has happened. But what are we doing with that bad thing? How are we capitalizing it to do good things and make a difference now?
The brain is like a computer.
Yeah.
Every keystroke is remembered. Every scene, everything that you've done in your life is in the brain. The problem occurs when you try to recall.
Or you don't want to recall.
Or you don't want to, or you can't recall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem.
Well, sometimes it's not encoded properly, which means that the memory doesn't really... It's like you have part of a memory, and it's not really quite all there. And it's like grasping.
Well, you know more about the brain than I do. I'm just a guy who has the ability to recall. I went on to my iPad today, tried to sign on. It says, give me your email address, and I gave it. And then it asked me a question.
Yeah.
This is your question in case there's a problem. What is your first telephone number? So I remembered my first telephone
yeah,
number,
yeah, yeah.
Waverly 36477. I had the ability to recall that, or I would have been stumped.
Yeah.
Where did that question come from? It was a question that Google asked me, not the question that I asked them to ask me. They
yeah.
just asked me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to put that in, in case there's a problem, I now have to know my first telephone number. So the ability to recall is very important.
But it's also having the mind clear enough that you can feel safe enough and clear enough to recall.
Well, that's the fear.
Ah.
That's getting into the fear of doing something for someone else and not getting any satisfaction at it, or the fear that somebody's going to do something bad to you, or the fear that a country's going to do bad, something bad to you. And that fear keeps us from doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. So what one way to get over the fear that you got over, you said you've learned to meditate, and that seems to have been right. central to you. But it's also these other paths, the volunteering, making a difference in the lives of others, having a purpose and meaning to your life. How would you say you've put together a package to address the stress that you went under? Because you said before, you spent 30 years of hell after the war.
Yes, I did.
And you were in denial. You didn't want to recall. You didn't want to deal with stuff.
There were meetings. I didn't never went to a meeting of my squadron for 40 years.
Wow.
I didn't never met any of the guys. I didn't want to see anybody. Didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, Transcendental Meditation gave me the settlement within myself, within my own mind, so that I could become more normal. And I could...
How did it do that? Just settling down, you mean?
It just changed the way my mind worked.
Huh.
It gave me a sense of belonging to myself, of being in control of myself. I used to play golf. I played golf a lot, and I played golf to kill. I played golf to beat the other guy, to beat the golf course. I never enjoyed it. I was not playing for the right reason. After I learned how to meditate, after I did TM, 1975, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
40 years, I played golf for pleasure. I didn't really care about killing anybody or killing the golf course or winning money from the other guy. Just I played for pure enjoyment. Life became more enjoyable for me. And with that energy that I had the ability to function in business. I had the ability to make the moves to do the things that I needed to do to be comfortable in life. And now at 91, I feel as if I'm in the best prime of life. That's how I feel.
It's amazing. And so part of that whole capability was being able to, you know, I love that word, that notion, take control. And I talk about these tools in our tool belt. I talk to everybody about that they need to exercise, they need to meditate, they need to change their diet and nutrition and what they take in their body and the crap that they stop taking in and get sleep, 7.5 to 9 hours of good, healthy sleep without all the dramas. But I talk about it as a tool and being able to, as important as the meditation is and how it transforms your nervous system and being able to relax and it's also getting that you're the one choosing to meditate. You're the one who's learning how to take control. You're the one who's also learning that a thought is just a thought and you don't have to be attached to it and you could let go.
Mm.
It's really about you coming home to you.
Yes.
It's exactly. Not just the meditation. It's also everything else around it.
Right.
You know?
It's the ability to speak to other people. Just the ability to say hello. You're sitting, I travel a lot. I talk a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe I talk too much. But when I sit down next to somebody and they want to visit, we have interesting conversations. Everybody has something to contribute to everybody else. Mm. All I have to do is have the desire to do that, to give themselves away every day. And as far as fear is concerned, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, if you face the things you fear to do, then death of fear is certain. So if we fear doing something, if we prejudge what somebody's going to say yes or no to, if we make predetermination that of what somebody's going to think, we're making it harder for ourselves to live. So if you have a thought that you want to put out to somebody, put it out there. Don't be surprised. Put it out there. See what happens. Just be yourself. And I found that being myself is the best thing that I can do.
Absolutely. You are listening to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Jerry Yellen today, talking about mental health issues and learning to take control again, learning how to make a difference in your life and in the lives of others with purpose and meaning.
Yeah, purity of purpose is a very important sentence as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I'm going through a hard time with my wife in a nursing home, and that's hard on my emotions. But physically and mentally, I've never felt better in my life than I feel right now.
How do you deal with that stress?
I meditate. That takes care of that. I visit her. I felt a lot of guilt about admitting her into the hospital, into the nursing home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've
had some people who are professionals tell me that I did the right thing. I knew I did the right thing because mm-hmm. I couldn't physically do the things that had to be done for my wife of 65 mm-hmm, years, mm-hmm. and they can do it there. And I visit, I speak, and I have my own life as well. You know, when people ask me, what do you say about why were you married for 65 years? I say there's three things: commitment, respect, and space. I have a little bit of space myself, a lot of space for my wife, a little bit of space for myself. Every single day I do something that's worthwhile for me by doing something for humanity.
And by doing something for humanity, you could then bring back that experience back home again, back to her, and share that sense. Again, the guilt and the remorse and the shame and the judgment.
No shame, but, you know, it's part of life.
It's part of life. And it's just like, okay, you feel that bad, but now you're actually doing something with that. So you go out, for instance, and you have this great adventure. And you're talking to people and you're making a difference in the world. And you take that upbeat attitude, that energy. And I'm sure every time you're with her, you bring that to her. And that must elevate her.
Yes, in a way. But I don't like being alone. I don't like living alone.
Of course not.
After 65 years of marriage. But it's part of life. And you have to face it. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's not fiction. It's a fact.
And just like we're not in denial about what happened, right? The bad things that have happened to us, right? In war or wherever. We're also not in denial about, bad things will happen to our bodies, to every one of our bodies.
Right.
And sadly, at some point, we will all pass from this earth in this body.
Well, we're liable to pass faster than we're supposed to the younger generation because what the humans are doing to the planet these days.
That.
And the weather is showing us that. I'm reading a book called Sapiens, The Beginning of Man of Human Life. It goes back 2.5 million years. And it seems that whenever humans came into some contact with the animal world or the plant world, eventually that world disappeared.
Mm.
And this goes back a long time. It's very interesting what we have done as humans. We're not in control of this world. We're just part of nature. And we have to live that way. Mm. We have to find a way to live with everybody else.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. But, you know, I like that thought, though, of not being in denial, you know, of who we are and what our nature is and what we can then, by not being in denial, by being strong and taking responsibility for ourselves, it means that we could go forward and create something better from it all. If we're in denial about global warming or whatever it is, global climate change, well, then the world will be destroyed.
Yeah.
And sadly, it'll go. If we're in denial about the fact that, you know, life is short, then we're not going to live our lives to the fullest.
Well, life isn't short for us these days. We're up in the years, the age of men and women, 91 was almost unheard of generations ago.
That's true.
And 91 and healthy, and I'm not trying to give myself any uppers or any
blessings. Well, you should have a pat on the back.
I have a purpose in life, and it keeps me going.
Yeah. And it's good to remind us all at whatever age to come back to that purpose, to come back to that mission. So, Jerry, what else do you think veterans could really do which is emblematic of all of us who have suffered. What is your prescription? Because you've come through this. You're not just 91 and healthy. You're 91, and your brain is as sharp as anybody I know.
Well, I'm fortunate with that. I guess I have good genes, but...
Well, you also do something to make it sharp.
Post-traumatic stress for the military is not handled well by our government. It's not handled well by science because the scientists, the doctors, a lot of them are connected to the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry is getting between $4 and $5 billion for drugs every month.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
And drugs don't help the condition of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
They just don't help. That's a tool. That's a crutch.
That's right.
So this is what the VA is doing. And what they're not doing is giving the veterans a chance to recover from the trauma that they all face.
And so what is it they need? So in the last
They need
2 minutes
something in- for themselves. They need to hold on to something for themselves. And have something, a tool, something that they can use every day for themselves to get rid of the stress. And
which
everybody
is?
Everybody talks about meditation. They talk about yoga. They talk about exercise. All of those help. Good diet helps. Good sleep helps. All of that helps. And most of the guys that I've seen are on drugs that prevent them from sleeping. They take a sleep to go up, and they take a sleep to go down, and none of them work. They don't have anything to hold on to themselves, for themselves, such as transcendental meditation. There may be other meditations, but I don't know about them. I only know about TM that I learned in 1975, 40 years ago. And I got my life back because I had no life from 1945 until 1975. I relived the war every single day. I thought about suicide. I spoke to the 16 guys at night, every night when I went to sleep. I flew with 16 guys who didn't come back. The oldest was 25 and the youngest was 19. And here I am living into my 30s, my 40s, almost into my 50s, with no life at all, no purpose in life. And then I learned a tool that allowed me to get rid of the stress that was caused by my combat experiences.
So the package that you suggest to people is to do a tool like meditation, to then take that sense of being able to take back control over yourself and do something with that control to help others and to have a life of purpose and meaning, to come back to that. And you might not know what that is. We all make mistakes every day, but to get up, it's not about the falling down, it's about how we get up again. We're all going to make mistakes, as we say. How are we getting up today?
Well, we're never judged by the things that we do. We're judged by the things we overcome.
That's right.
And
what a great statement.
So we have to overcome many facets of our life as we get older, as we live longer. And keeping busy is part of that. And I keep busy. I write. I'm involved with other people. I have air shows that I'm going to be going to this year. I'm leaving on the 17th of March for Iwo Jima, the 70th reunion of honor between the Japanese and the Americans. And the ambassadors are going to be there. The generals are going to be there. And we'll have an opportunity to visit with a lot of young Marines, the young veterans as well.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Thank you once again for doing this. What a pleasure. This is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. Thank you all, and we will see you next week. Have a great week.
Bye.
Be powerful, be purposeful, be meaningful. Bye.
Bye.